The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
The amount of people looking for Andy Moore around Positano, it was all the rage. They're asking him what he's got to do next. When's the next episode out? The Football Pod's gone international.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Now we're going to continue on the football theme. Delighted to say Martin Lipton, head of football content at The Sun, is on the line. Good morning to you, Martin.
Good morning.
We had Paul McGrath on the show during the week there. I was just listening to Yapstam. I don't know if you heard the comment just during the ad break there. Paul McGrath was asked whether he was going to go with, whether he would pick to be alongside him at centre-back, Vidic, Stam or Ferdinand. And he went Stam. Good call?
Well, I think you'd have all three, wouldn't you? Or could have any of all three. They're fantastic players. I mean, it's interesting, of course, the fallout with Fergie and Stam was something that set United back for a year or so. It was a mistake, I think, that both sides recognise that. I think as a partnership, Vidic and Ferdinand worked really, really well. As an individual centre-half, to be fair, I'd have any of them. I think if you wanted, depending on the type of game, if you were going to dominate the game, you'd want Ferdinand because he carried the ball. If you were on a defensive game and you had to stand firm under pressure, either the other two were so resourceful and resilient that you'd want one of those.
Yeah. The Ferguson point is an interesting one in that, and I was watching the documentary on Prime during the week, so it's sort of top of the head, but the there were a lot of fallings out. Paul McGrath was obviously another one that he shifted out of the club. It almost feels like when you're going to make a number of those calls, you're probably at some point, because most of them were fairly controversial. Like, I know the Keane one, obviously, he was coming towards the end of his career, but there was Beckham and other players who fans might have felt were actually going to still continue to add something to the club over the years. But it was Ferguson's, that was part of his makeup, really, that he was going to have that churn, and sometimes you were going to get it wrong.
Well, I think there was For a long time, there was a political party in Mexico, which is the Institutional Revolutionary Party. And I always felt that was a way of summing up Fergie's reign, that he was an institution, but he would continually overhaul to refresh and renew the team. And even if people felt it wasn't a good idea, he felt it was right and necessary. Mm. There was a need for bloodletting sometimes to keep people on their toes, to change the dynamic. It's why he kept on changing his number two as well, because people didn't realise that players need a new voice to hear.
Yeah. That force of personality, Martin, in some ways, which maybe brings us on maybe to the football this weekend, will probably never wield that type of power again, I suppose, the way clubs and businesses are structured now, that it just seems very unlikely. And that might not be the worst thing in the world, I guess. Equally, it seems less likely by the month, and interested for your take on this, that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going down in the pantheon of any of the world's greatest managers. He's good at United, I guess, compared to what's been there before, but United surely at some point will want better than good.
Well, it depends if they win things. If they don't win things, they'll change. If they do win things, they'll stick. There's a desire of the fans for him to do well. If you look at the results alone, if not always the performances, it's hard to argue that they've done badly. You know, they've done pretty well this season. The one blip, obviously, was the Young Boys game. But where's the trophy count? You know, it's the charge that's often laid at Tottenham's door. With United's resources, I think it's an even more legitimate one. They've got these players who cost fortunes. Good players, not denying that in any way, shape or form. They've got Ronaldo now, they've got Fernandes, they've got Sancho, they've got Rashford, they've got a lot of players. They've got Maguire and De Gea. They should be winning things. And if he doesn't win something this season, I do think it'll be difficult, even for United to stick with it. And, of course, the other factor is it will be a new chief executive at United at the end of the season compared to now. It'll be Richard Arnold rather than Ed Woodward, and Woodward was more personally invested in the success of Solskjaer.
And that could put him in danger. Do you go with the Simon Jordan on TalkSport during the week saying that United are, he wasn't saying they weren't an elite club, he was saying they're not now an elite team for the very reason about the trophy cabinet been bare for the last, whatever it is, 4 or 5 years. Do you go with that?
No, because they're still the biggest club in Britain. They're an enormous football club with huge cachet. And they are finishing in the top two and three every season. And actually, you know, it's not as if they're falling to seventh or eighth and, you know, out of the frame, which you could argue is the situation at Arsenal and potentially at Spurs. United are in a bit of a dip. There's no question. But they're knocking on the door to come out of it. And it only needs one trophy for all that to change. Now, I'm not saying they're going to get it, and I think it'll be very difficult for them to win the title this year. I think they're probably the fourth team in a four-horse race. Mm. But full favourites win, not that irregularly, as we know.
Yeah.
Martin, just to ask you about the North London Derby. Like, it's our live game and off the ball this Sunday afternoon, and I know both have had probably mixed starts to the season so far, and Spurs' record at the Emirates really isn't the best. But amongst the fans, Arsenal and Tottenham fans, like, is it the same lore and kind of, I guess, grit around the North London Derby, or has it lost some of its allure over the years?
No, I think it's still as strong as ever. I do feel, even as a Spurs fan and someone without any hair, as you can see, it's the equivalent of two bald blokes fighting over a comb at the moment. But nevertheless, there's no doubt that it means. I saw something on social media yesterday from Arsenal fans saying, come on, make sure you buy your tickets wherever you get them from. We've got to turn it into something hostile. This is the North London Derby. And it's the same view on the other side of the Seven Sisters, other end of the Seven Sisters Road. It means an awful lot. And irrespective of the actual merits of the teams compared to other sides in the league, it counts. This matters. It really, really does.
Like, is Arteta under pressure if he loses this game? Like, I know they've won the last couple of games. One was in the Cup midweek, but he's one of the managers under severe scrutiny, and certainly with the start to the season, the first couple of games, certainly that magnifying glass really focused down on him. So a couple of results go against him, he could be certainly under severe pressure.
I think if they were to lose three or four again, that would change. One-off game losing now would be disappointment for Arsenal. But the immediate crisis has been quelled by those results, particularly the win at Burnley, when they withstood everything that was thrown at them and got the 1-0 win. To be fair, both of them managers are under scrutiny and rightly so for different reasons. I think that I would argue that neither of them are particularly secure in their jobs at the moment. Mm. But that doesn't mean that either of them are under an immediate threat. I don't think they are. But I also feel there's probably more chance if a decision was to be made swiftly that it would be Nuno Espirito Santo whose job was more precarious, just because I don't think there's any feeling at Arsenal that they want to make a change. Whereas were things to go south at Spurs, Daniel Levy might think that he's got to be seen to be proactive. Now, I'm not saying that there's any way that he wants to do that or is even thinking about it. I just think because he was clearly not first, second, third or even fourth choice to take over the club, that it might be easier to dispense with him if things go wrong. My issue with his football is it's all so reactive. But it always was at Wolves. They got the best results against the better teams when they didn't have to make the game. And thus far, I've seen in the last few weeks a Spurs side that looked lacking in inspiration and thought, not helped, let's be honest, by the fact that he had seven players missing for different reasons against Crystal Palace, and that Chelsea are a really, really good side and probably the best side in the league. And that showed in the second half on Sunday, whereas in the first half, at least they played a bit.
Mm. And like, maybe what endorses your point even more is that maybe things are coming right slightly for Arsenal. Look, again, you have to sort of look at the quality of opposition, whereas, and look at with extenuating reasons for Tottenham season hasn't really begun yet.
Well, they got away with three results that were flattering at the start of the season. I think realistically they didn't perform that well. They then had a very poor performance at Palace where they got what they deserved. Played well for 45 minutes actually against Chelsea. And if they score a goal, it's a really interesting game. But someone just reminded me that football lasts for 90 minutes, not 45, and you've got to do that for longer. He hasn't had his first choice team on the pitch at any point yet. So I think he'll be judged more when that happens. That might be this Sunday. I think he'd be under increasing pressure to play Ndombele, despite the fallout when he was trying to get rid of him in the summer. He needs to play Kane where Kane is at his best, rather than playing as a left half, which where he played on Sunday, which made no sense whatsoever. But he still hasn't got the pace of And what they really lacked in that second half against Chelsea was an outball with either Moura or Bergwijn. There wasn't. They needed one more player with legs and didn't have it.
Yeah, and the point about the future of either manager, like a win in this game, obviously buys whoever wins it a good bit of time. Who is going to win it?
Well, Spurs never win at Arsenal, do they? Last time they won was 2010 in the league. Go back then forever, 95, I think. I mean, so you've got to suggest that if there's going to be a winner, it'll be Arsenal. It wouldn't shock me if it ended up as a one or a goalless draw, in truth. I think the fear of defeat might outweigh the desire for victory.
Yeah, it's a fair point. The Chelsea City games is, like, interestingly, two of the biggest games of the weekend going head to head tomorrow in the half 12 matches. We mentioned United Villa a bit earlier, but Chelsea City, two brilliant tacticians. Tuchel with the advantage over Pep over the last four games, and Pep without a raft of players swings the advantage maybe Chelsea's way again.
I think it would have been the advantage in Chelsea's court, irrespective of the injury absences at City at the moment. I think Chelsea looked the most organised, thoughtful, powerful in terms of the collective, not individuals, but also in terms of certain individuals, team in the league. I don't see a weakness in Chelsea's squad at all. I think that they have, fueled now by belief, they feel that they have what it takes. They have the extra goal threat in Lukaku. Their midfield options are, given the way they play, are quite dizzying, actually. They're really well placed defensively. They can play Azpilicueta in the three or in a four. I think they're in a terrific position. City, they, despite 14 different scorers, I still think they could do with one player scoring eight goals, and they haven't got that. They don't have a line leader. The injuries are there. We haven't seen De Bruyne of Italy yet this season. We haven't really seen Foden, he only just came back, so they could be improvements. But something seems to be slightly awry there. Mm. We saw that the first weekend against Spurs. We saw it last week against Southampton. They, when they win, you know, when they're good, they're very, very good. But when they're bad, they're horrid, and or maybe not horrid, but they're ordinary. And I think Chelsea will feel that they can capitalise on the weaknesses and limitations in that City side.
Yeah, you do feel that the Harry Kane stuff might come more into focus as the season advances, as you say, in terms of that goal-scoring bit. What the we mentioned the players, and look, at some of them, there's five or six of them first-team players that some of them might be fit again for this weekend, and we don't know. But that notwithstanding, the big thing, obviously, after the Champions League defeat last year was that Pep had overthought it. Is there any chance that without those players that suddenly his options are much more limited than they would have been, and that might in some way help City or help him?
Well, it does mean he has to pick the obvious team, perhaps. But then again, he doesn't like doing the obvious things, does he? He wants permanent reinvention. He feels it's an intellectual, footballing, tactical, managerial challenge to outwit the opponent. And sometimes you just want to put your best players on the pitch in their best positions. But that, you know, that's not the way he thinks. He wants to be... He's never satisfied. And that's why he doesn't last too long at any club, because he always wants to challenge himself. I think that whatever he does, whatever team he puts out, they are going to have to perform exceptionally well to avoid defeat at this Chelsea side at the moment. Mm. I think Chelsea are just the best team in the league, as it, you know, from what we've seen thus far. But it is only mid-September. Things can evolve and change. Players can go out of form. But Chelsea seems to have more players in form than anybody else, and I think it's going to be really, really tough. And if you offer City a draw, I suspect they would take it. Chelsea wouldn't settle for a draw. They expect to win this game.
Martin, just to ask you about when we're on the topic of Arsenal a moment ago, Arsene Wenger, some interesting comments from him. I think he was speaking to Dan Rowan at the BBC about, I guess, the future of football and different proposals that he has for changing the world game. I know this, you know, biennial World Cup every couple of years, even years, is one of the ideas. And then guaranteed rest periods for players as well once tournaments are over. Like, what have you made of his proposals generally? Like, are there any you kind of agree with, disagree with? Maybe the World Cup one in particular.
The thing that I really think is an excellent idea is fewer international breaks. I don't like one international break for the entire year in October, but I do like the secondary proposal, which would be a break in October and a slightly shorter one in March. I've long argued for three blocks of international football, you know, autumn, spring and summer. And I think that has merit in a myriad of ways. It also creates more space in the calendar for club football, which is often a demand of the clubs. On the concept of a World Cup every 2 years, I'm quite agnostic about it. I'm not a huge proponent of it, but nor am I a massive opponent. I think it's an idea, and I think it's all, more importantly, I guess, I've looked at the numbers. He's got the votes. Infantino has Africa and Asia and CONCACAF and Oceania, four or five in South America, and I reckon quite a large number, maybe 20 in Europe. You know, if he wants to push it to a vote and it will come to, I suspect, Congress of FIFA in May, I think it will go through.
Can I ask you just one other question, Martin, before we let you off as well? It was just a story that appears in the back page of the Mail this morning about two-thirds, I don't know if you've seen it, two-thirds of Premier League players having not had the vaccine. And the details of it are that, as it's reported here, Premier League clubs fearing the season could descend into chaos amid ongoing resistance to COVID jabs, with at least two squads having no more than six players vaccinated. Definitely stands out on this side of the water. We've been pretty good with getting everything done and the importance of having sports teams almost advocate on behalf of it. It seems like this is very much not the case here. Now, there are some teams, and they talk about Wolves, Brentford and Leeds having huge percentages of their squads vaccinated. But both in terms of the message and the potential impact on the track in terms of players been out, this feels like it definitely took me back, I have to say, to see that there are that many within squads not vaccinated.
I hope if this is the case, and I'm sure it is, you know, not going to write it without it being true. There should be no postponements allowed for any team for COVID reasons. And if they have to play the youth team, so be it, because it's an absolute abdication and abrogation of responsibility by the individuals concerned and to a degree the club. They should be ordering them to take the jabs. It's not difficult. It isn't going to hurt you. It's a prick in the arm. Get it done. More importantly, it's the health and safety of other people. And to be so selfish, so self-important, to ignore what is a clear benefit for yourself and others is inconceivably stupid, idiotic and selfish. And I have no sympathy whatsoever for any players or clubs who suffer as a result of this. It's unacceptable.
Do you think some of it, Martin, we had a bit of a debate over here over the last few weeks at one of our main GAA teams who went on to win the All-Ireland Football Championship here, and whether many of them had had the vaccine or not, and the story had emerged that maybe a lot of them hadn't taken it because it might negatively impact on their preparation for the game. And I see Tyson Fury saying that he's only going to take one jab ahead of the Wilder fight and he'll get the other one afterwards. Do you think that, or is it a philosophical objection to it?
Oh, I think it's the form, right? I think they're worried about performance. Then get it done in the summer when you had the chance, when you're not playing for a month. That's the ridiculous nature of it. They could have done it at any point since... Once you had a... You know, we've got 80%, I think, have had at least one jab in the UK. 65% or so have had two jabs. The injection, the vaccine has been readily available since widely available for anybody. And it's free... Since July, there's no reason not to have had it by now. There really isn't. I know that there were certain, I think it was 10 people in the British Olympic team didn't have it. A couple of those, I think, were boxers. They were worried that it would impact on them because the time that they were offered it was 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the Olympics. Well, that was in the close season for football. They could easily have had the injection then. There is a danger of long COVID. There's players like Cardallo talked about it. If I hear a player whinging about, oh, it's not fair, I got COVID and it's hurt me. Well, why didn't you take the injection? If you've had the vaccine and you still get it, I'll listen to you. If you don't, shut up. It's your own fault. Stop moaning. You're responsible for yourself. Do not look for sympathy when you don't have the intelligence to do what the world, every scientific expert every genuine person with knowledge and not the idiots who look at, that get their news source from TikTok and Facebook, are telling you to do.
Yeah. Martin Lipton, thanks a million.
Thanks, cheers.
Martin Lipton of The Sun, with some strong thoughts on that.